A values-based life starts here.
Welcome to In Conversation with Heartlines, a show where we try and help you do what's right so that you can fix the things that are wrong. Welcome to another episode of In Conversation with Heartlines, a show where we help you do what's right so that you can fix the things that are wrong in your community, in society, and ultimately we can fix the country. I am not alone. I am joined by a colleague and what I hope will turn out to be a really, really good friend in the future. His name is Fred.
Hey, Andile. Good to be here with you. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Good to have you. So, please, just let the listeners know a little bit about yourself.
So, my name is Brett Fish Anderson. Fish is my nickname, although I've used it on camps so often that lots of people think it's my last name. It stands for Faithful in Serving Him and is more just kind of a daily guide of how I try to live my life. And I have been working with Heartlines for the last 5 years, I think now. Tend to be very skilled at doing things that don't bring in money. So I do a lot of volunteering work with organizations specifically that work in education in the Cape Flats in Cape Town. So I live in Deep River in Cape Town and I own the world's most famous stuffed dolphin called No Bob. And he's called No Bob because he doesn't bob. Yeah, I'm a big fan of chocolate and I hate raisins with a passion. I don't know what else you want to know.
I was hoping you're also going to mention pineapple on pizza.
Pineapple on pizza, yeah. I'm kind of known online a little bit for being the big anti-pineapple on pizza guy. I also recently started a podcast of my own called Out of the Fishbowl, and my first episode focused on pineapple on pizza and how that's such a divisive thing amongst people. But I just have a passion for people and mobilizing them to live out what they say they believe, because I think many of us have beliefs or we have faith or things like that, but often what we say and how we live is so very different.
And how have you seen this play out in the community where you live and the community that you serve?
Yeah, so I think I do a lot of kind of speaking and writing, and so there's a lot of time of just encouraging and mobilizing people. And I think I tend to surround myself with people that kind of care about the same kind of things, so things like justice, things like conversations about race and things like that. So a lot of the things are very kind of uncomfortable, the conversations that we have, and definitely push into those areas. So I have definitely seen people and communities shaken around those things, but really start engaging with things that matter. And so it definitely is something like you're not going to hang out with me for a long time and just have superficial conversations at some point, and usually quite quickly I think we'll get deep on stuff, but at the same time be able to have fun and joke around and stuff. So it really is about living life to the full. Like, how do we live life well in a way that really works for everyone? And so yeah, it's constantly on the go. So things like the race conversations, I have a hashtag called Not On Our Watch, and it's this daily commitment to interrupt racism where it happens, whether it's online or offline. And so that keeps me busy because I live in Cape Town. And
yeah.
Cape Town is known for being racist. And so like the overt stuff is easy to see, but often it's like the more subtle stuff where you're constantly pushing back on people and challenging them and trying to get them to think and trying to get myself to think about the way we live, the things I say, the things I think, the things that the systems and structures have put in me, which can often be very small and subtle. So it's like an ongoing learning process, both in myself and then hopefully there's some impact in the community around me.
Changing the nation one conversation at a time.
Totally, yeah.
Thank you so much. And we are also with Craig Bouchier, for all the way from Durban. Craig, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Andile.
Welcome. Craig, you've been doing a lot of work around all the campaigns, but today we want to really focus in on the Fathers Matter campaign. Firstly, tell us who you are, what you do with Heartlines, and how long you've been doing it.
Yeah, so as you said, my name's Craig Bouchier. I'm from Durban. Durban, born and bred, lived there my whole life. Every time a opportunity comes my way to leave Durban, somehow the still small voice keeps me there. The good news is I have left the community that I was part of for 50 years and moved from Greenwood Park to Amanzimtoti. And so that's an interesting change. Community's completely different to the one I'm used to, but excited about this change in my life and for my family as well.
Okay, great. Well, welcome to the show. And what do you do with Heartlines?
My journey with Heartlines probably started more than 10 years ago from the initial campaigns. And so I worked with Heartlines, helping with many of the campaigns that have taken place in Durban, Nothing for Mahala, where we reach hundreds, in fact, I think probably thousands of people in face-to-face encounters from schools. Yeah, so being involved with Heartlines, as I said, for more than 10 years, helping deliver the campaigns, I've always been drawn to what Heartlines stands for and what they want to get out to our country. And so involved extensively with the Nothing for Mahala campaign, values around money, what's your story, been involved with a number of bridge programs, story sharing sessions, and more recently Fathers Matter. And in fact, Fathers Matter, I think out of all our campaigns, has excited me the most. I love all our campaigns, but Fathers Matter really excited me before we even started the campaign, because it's really close to my heart. I was privileged to have an incredible father, but also sadly have journeyed with many young people who have not had my privilege of an incredible father and has served as a social father to hundreds of young people over the years.
So Craig, it's amazing that this is a program that obviously like grabs your heart, and you had an amazing father. Was there any reason beyond that in terms of this program going, sure, is it just because you had a good father, or was it because you've seen kind of the absence of fathers around you? Like what was it about it that really you said, yo, this is good?
Yeah, so working as a youth pastor for 16 years, experienced it, witnessed it, had many conversations with young people, rescued young people along the journey because of fathers who were abusive, but also witnessing it with my son in his school career. So he was in one school from grade R to matric, a Christian school, and sadly witnessed children in a Christian school with Christian parents were absent fathers, yet they lived in the same home. And that for me was extremely sad. At many of the sporting events that I attended, I was the only father. And that for me really, it hurt me, but I could see the hurt in my son because of his friends' fathers not being present and the longing for his friends, almost thinking, you have such an incredible father. I was definitely the poorest father of any child in the school. Drove the worst car out of all the fathers in the school. I think they probably wondered, you know, is this the driver? Or who is this bringing my son to the school? That was a very expensive school, but I wanted Christian values for my son, and that's why I had him there. And so witnessing that and seeing the pain, but also seeing some of my son's friends beyond school and what's happened in their lives, and you realize, where were the fathers? Where were the fathers? And that's in a Christian setting. And I know if we look in community at large, we know there's huge problems. But I'm saying, you know, if the church is struggling to get this thing right, then this problem with fathers is massive. And I see it as maybe the greatest pandemic our country has ever faced, in my opinion.
And I think you're giving kind of modern day advice or modern day speaking into something that has in a sense been quite an obvious thing in South Africa. It's been well documented that we have a problem with fatherlessness, with abuse of fathers, all that kind of things. What is it about Fathers Matter that gives you some kind of hope that we can interrupt the narrative if it is something that's so huge? Mm. Like why is this program going to make any difference?
Yeah, so again, I think it definitely connects to my personal journey, in that I've seen the value of a father in my life growing up with three brothers. And my father was a simple man, very humble man, never had loads of money. But there was one thing in our home, there was love there. And so every school holidays throughout my schooling, every friend of me and my brothers all spent their holidays at our house playing, even though we're from the same community, but it was always at our house. And I wondered why, because they had better resources, we'd eat better there, etc. And it points to me that there was love in our home that they weren't quite experiencing in their own. And then seeing that for me, seeing that with my son, and the fact that it's times I get a little bit upset when everything is about Mother's Day, Women's Day, Women's Month. And I'm not against women being honored because they have done an incredible job and they've taken on more than their fair share. But with that, I've also witnessed fathers are being put down as if fathers don't matter, as if fathers are not playing a role. And I know that, hey, I think I'm a fairly decent father. And I know if you ask my son, I think he'd give a fairly good report on me as a father and how crucial my life's been in his life. And so for me, I do believe that, one, fathers have failed and fathers need to take responsibility. But two, not all fathers are doing a bad job. Not all fathers are absent. And so it's a bit of both. I see the great need and the void that exists with fatherlessness. But at the same time, I also see and know some amazing fathers.
So having been a pastor for 16 years and seeing the impact of fatherlessness in your congregation, for instance, what role do you think the church plays or should play today in addressing this issue of fatherlessness?
Yeah, I think the church definitely needs to recognize the great need for those growing up without fathers. And so when I look, and I know I grew up in a different era, but I think the values that existed in my era are still applicable today. And so with me having this great father, I can tell you of social fathers that also played a role in my life. Yet I didn't, it's not that I needed it because my father wasn't active, but I know it added so much value. And I believe the church can add that value into fatherless children that are in their congregation. But at the same, I think with that, you know, you'd have those who might be orphaned, but you have those being brought up by single mothers, those who are being brought up by their grannies or gogos. And there's a role that only a male, a man, a father can play and bring to a child that the mother can't. I recently had a conversation with a single mother, her child's an adult. She's actually in the process of establishing an organization to work with boys who are growing up without fathers. Even though she's an incredible mother, raised a good son, but she recognizes the void of not having a father in her son's life. And so, as well as mothers who raise their children alone have done, there's still a great need to have a male in a child's life, especially in the lives of boys. There's a great need there.
So Craig, I was going to ask you a question about myself as someone who doesn't have children, but as you were speaking, you mentioned something called social fathers, and I think maybe there's an overlap in there. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by a social father?
You mentioned earlier, Brett, your work and your involvement in the communities that you're involved in, schools and that. I can tell you now that you're a social father. Whether you recognize it as such or not, you are a social father. The work you've done in communities, done in church, you've filled that gap of what a social father is. And so I think, you know, a social father is somebody, it could be a soccer coach, could be a teacher, could be a neighbor, could be, you know, I can think of times where you might be taking your kids to the beach, but the neighbor who's raising a child by themselves and the father's not there to take them to the beach, that you are asking that parent, you know, is it okay if your child comes with us, we're going to the beach, I'll take responsibility for them. Because that child is now seeing how a father functions within his family, and he's beginning to experience that, so that the day might come for him, and when he becomes a father, he will have a reference point of what a father looked like. And for me, I think in dealing with this pandemic of fatherlessness in our nation, social fathers are going to play a crucial role, and people just recognizing that I can be the social father. And the social father is not there to come into the home and now to begin to tell the mother how to raise the child. And I think that needs to be clear. social father's not there and say, oh, he has a gap, you know, she's actually quite a nice looking lady. You know, no, 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 we're not looking for that kind of social father. That will be an anti-social father. We are looking for somebody that genuinely cares, can empathize with the situation of that child and recognize that, hey, the bit I have and that I can offer, I will offer. We're not asking for people to try and give what they don't have. And in giving, we're not talking materially necessarily, but if that's needed, you can. But giving of the time, giving of that space. And so I found myself having many conversations with my son's friends, but I can recall my father having conversations with my friends. And for me, that's a beautiful thing to happen, because then you have a young man or young boy, if that's the case, learning to actually interact with an adult male figure. And I think there's a need for those lessons to be passed on, and for that child to learn to engage with another man. You know, you can't have just with women, you know, and I know where that's not possible with women, the grace of God will fill that gap and that void. So if somebody is growing up and they don't have that male figure, you know, God is a gracious God, and He says He's a father to the fatherless. And so I trust God that He'll fill that gap, but it doesn't take away the responsibility that we have for community and for the children in our community who are growing up without fathers.
So in your work in ministry, and you said you've been blessed to have a father who was positively present throughout, how have you seen this scenario play out where someone who wasn't fathered now becomes a father? Mm. How have you seen them taking that challenge in your work in ministry and in dealing with people in the community?
When I look at that, I think you can get people who have not had that and actually be great fathers. But I do see a requirement in that, is that you're going to need to do your research. You're going to need to read books. And so for me, even though I had this incredible father, do you know that before my son was born, I went to the bookstore looking for books to teach me how to be a father, yet I had a father that had taught me how to be a father. So my thinking was, how can I try and even be a better father than my father was? Now, I hope I achieve that. I don't know if I will. So there's definitely a need for those fathers to be assisted with the right information to be able to father correctly, because that information is a void in their lives, and so they're gonna just go on the fly, which can lead to many problems along the way. But actually, by them being educated, and I believe fathers matter, with the resources we are producing and supplying, can actually help by giving that information to those fathers so they can be great fathers. And I think even by them becoming part of a group of fathers that begin to talk to each other, help each other, become these men that are sharpening each other, so that we can raise a amazing generation of fathers that will change the status quo.
And I think you've already sort of gone into what we want to move into, which is tips on fathering.
Yeah.
So you said the first thing you did was you went out, you looked for material, you looked for resources on how to be a good father. But practically speaking, if a person has learned maybe today you're gonna be a father, what are, you know, maybe like, let's say, 5 practical tips that you could give them on preparing to be a father, but also on how to get themselves more ready? I don't think you can really be ready.
Yeah.
But how can we at least better prepare?
The first tip that I would suggest, and I'm thinking about them as we speak, is the importance of a father in the first 1,000 days. I share that tip having failed probably for the first 500-600 days, because my view was that's the stage the mother is needed for that child needs to be breastfed, that child needs the mother. When the child starts walking, that's when I come into play. Then I can hold the child's hand. So, which means, fortunately, my child started walking early. Before he was one, he was walking. But I wasn't quite ready. I said probably the 18-month mark. And so the 18-month mark would probably be plus minus 500 days. But what I have learned is that those first 1,000 days are absolutely critical. But also the fact that the father can bond with the child by holding the child, by even assisting with the raising of their child, changing its nappy, feeding their child. Because the mother's enjoying the privilege of that bonding, and therefore the child is so connected to the mother, and often that connection remains for the entire lives. And the father's disconnected because the father's not involved at that early stage. And so for me, prior to the Father's Matter campaign, I worked with an organization and we took in abandoned children, babies. And that's when I discovered the first 1,000 days and its value. And I realized, okay, I need to repent and ask God to forgive me for the first 500 that I was not so engaged. Engaged early, maybe it's part of the first tip, but going into the second, is that the responsibility of parenting is a co-parenting relationship. So you co-parent from the get-go, not only when they're teens, you know. And I always said, you know, I even used to say to my wife, the one thing you don't have to worry about, once he's a teen, that's my speciality, working as a youth pastor. But I can say that I was involved from the 18 month onward, but to fathers today, now be involved from day one.
Be involved from day one.
That's all the time we have for this week. Catch the conclusion of this episode next week. Enjoy the rest of your week. Have a great weekend and see you later.